Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into spring season. Got new draft picks from the Ravens. Luke will be out in Owings Mills. We'll be talking about all things there, as well as Oriole stuff. And I have, if you've been listening at length, I have been talking at length about this World Cup bid as being the biggest thing that's ever happened to Baltimore, because it is, and I know better. So, and it feels like the fix is in. So we'll be talking a lot of soccer around here, but this guy is my chief digital officer around here, and we are going to be upgrading Baltimore Positive in the not too distant future. I have a new module coming for the Crab Cake Tour that you'll find out in the front of the site, which is something I've been trying to do a year ago. But, you know, Mike, this is like where a guy like you comes in, where you don't get around to it. You know, you put things off and you get a list together. And the good news, and I know we're going to talk about this a little bit, is I've got an intern this summer. First intern I've had here in 15 years. And, I'm getting some help around here. So my help wanted sign that you and I put out on the door 2 weeks ago about potentially having a chief operating officer in my company again, as well as maybe an executive assistant. As my company grows and we sign Window Nation and we bring new sponsors like Goodwill on and the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, that, you know, growth is good, right? But these young people, they're all scarred. You know, I mean, anybody went through 2020, it's a whole different workplace out there, is it not?
Oh, for sure. And continued congrats on the growth. It beats the alternative, that's for sure. But yeah, it's interesting times, and it's very interesting and challenging times for young people. Not even just those who are entering the workforce, but just those who are going to school, and, you know, which should be the, you know, I mean, look, there were parts of school that I loved and there were parts of school that I hated, but.
You went to Maryland?
No. Yeah. I went to Maryland, but before that I went to the Baltimore County high school and middle school. And, you know, those formative years of going through school, I'm trying to think back of all the stuff we had to worry about, and contrast that with what young people today have to worry about. And, you know, you hear all this stuff about challenges and mental illness and all that, and you're like, what's the deal with that? But if you take a deep dive and you compare, you know, just what's going on, it's kind of glaring.
Well, we don't have a class in school for coping or for finding happiness. You know, I talked to Leonard Raskin a lot about this at Raskin Global, just even a class on what to do with your money or what dream you might be following, right? Like, to have an American dream, to have a goal and a strategy. These are not things that I was taught in school. These are things maybe my parents may have tried to instill work ethic upon me, but maybe not decision-making. You know, my parents didn't make great decisions. They were great people, nice people and all that, but every door that Monty Hall offered them, they didn't always choose the right door. And I think, you know, part of that for young people is this notion that, you know, the participation trophies and we'll have you involved in whatever. Hey, man, the last 2 years, if you're still here, we all got the participation trophy of still being here. And all of us, whether it was a mask, a job, a prom lost, a party lost, a graduation lost, a relative lost, right? A human lost, an animal lost, an opportunity. My wife and I haven't met the man who saved my wife's life's wife yet. He's been married 2 years. He got married at the beginning of the plague. We haven't been in a room because we haven't been able to. So there's so many of those kinds of things that are getting connected now, right? As I start to see people traveling and doing things in the job market and like all of that. But there is this last 2 years that has left scars on some people that will heal up and will move on. But for other people, they get tumbled under this. And it has been unprecedented for anybody in the world. You and I own small businesses locally. Challenges that we've had as 50-year-old humans that have taken all that we have. I can't imagine being a 16, 17, 18, 19 year old person at this point in life. Maybe not so 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, right? Like, young kids adjust, keeping a mask on a 6 year old. I'm sure it was no thrill, but I think they'll respond to it differently than I think I would have had my junior and senior years gotten wiped out.
For sure. I'm still stuck on your Monty Hall reference. So that was digging deep, and only people of a certain age.
I have a little Dennis Miller in me lately. You either get the reference or you don't get the reference, and that's okay.
And you don't care.
If you get it, great. You laugh. Some of them you don't get. It's fine.
your big win would be people Googling Monty Hall and them seeing a spike because people want to know who the hell Monty Hall was. Look, so you and I are same generation. I'm trying to think of what all of the stressors, let's just talk high school, were. It was, am I going to be able to get into a college? Maybe.
Well, it's also getting drafted and fighting the Russians in 1980 too, right?
I mean, so that was a thing. I mean, there were, you know, we heard our parents' generation had, you know, we had fire drills.
Everybody had a big brother that worried about going to Vietnam or the day that their card, what number they were. Every older brother in my neighborhood had that. Everyone.
And they had, you know, our parents' age had bomb drills at school where you had to go under your desk. All we had were, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't remember any drill like that. We had fire drills, which was awesome because it came at a random time.
I put my head under my desk in 1973, 74, 75 at Colgate Elementary. We had I remember bomb drills, head underneath the desk. I remember that from being 6 years old. So I do remember that.
But it did. I don't, but that could be just college damage, I guess.
I barely remember the Penguins at East Point Mall, but it was right around that time.
But ultimately, that slowed down. I mean, now there's no bomb drill that's going to protect you from a nuclear.
Now it's active shooter, active shooter.
So think about it. You know, okay. So in elementary school, you put your head under the desk. After that, it was the fire drill, which was very welcome because it interrupted whatever they were trying to teach you for half an hour, so you could talk to your friends. I mean,
I can still hear that ding, ding, ding. That special fire bill drill.
It was so welcome.
The bomb drill was different. The bomb drill was woo, woo, woo. You know, it was totally, there was a whistle. It was different.
Yeah, I may have blocked that out, but I don't remember one bomb drill, you know, growing up.
I did. I had them.
You know, but yeah, you're talking about. So here's a couple phenomenons. I fortunately wasn't one who bullied or was bullied, but I know I saw it. And I know that at least the people who were bullied when we were growing up got to go home, and at least there was a space of time where they didn't have to deal with it. Now, if you're a kid and you're bullied, you go home and they just pick it up rather than in person on social media, and you can't escape it. I mean, that's a big thing. Going through, you know, learning in front of your computer and not being socialized for over a year had to have some damage, and going right from there to this stuff that's going on, you know, in Ukraine and dealing with that and just these veiled threats of nuclear, you know, responses and all this stuff. It's just one trauma after another. And to your point, these are kids to our generation's flaw, gave everyone a trophy. So they already come into this experience with that baggage. And to me, it's easy to understand why these young kids are just on the edge of just, and it's sad, but we got to come to the realization that it's a thing, and I don't know how we fix it, but
I have a COVID intern this summer. My intern is a sophomore becoming a junior. We may make her part of the show before it's all over. We're going to have some fun with her. But, you know, she calls herself a COVID baby. She's like, yeah, you know, lost my prom. You know, my graduation was a car honk horn. And I'm like, man, that would, you know, I mean, it's a story. But and you're obviously doing okay off at college, right, and having a good time. But the last couple of years, I think for everybody – do you have any thoughts on the Twitter thing this week? I mean, of all the weird things that happen, are you a Twitter guy? Because I am. It's a newspaper for a newspaper guy, right? Like I've been a newspaper guy my whole life. I worked at newspapers. I'm going to be writing and talking a lot about that experience of gathering news and what is a fact and what is a Russian bot and what is propaganda and what is compromise and like all of that. But the Twitter thing this week about free speech, right? And about what is free speech and free speech that creates wars, free speech that are lies, free speech that's hateful. It's an interesting conversation we're all going to have now that this guy has spent $44 billion buying something that is, to some of us, a little bit of a hobby, to some of us a news place, to some of us an information source. But more than that, that's where we are in the world. I mean, if you would have gotten together with me, Web Connection, the first time I met you 20 years ago and said, these websites will be selling for $44 billion and they'll become online places that one man has the ability to throw you off the platform where nobody can hear you anymore, right? That is the capability of that, or just algorithm you to death where you tweet and you Facebook for no one. You think the whole world's hearing you, but they just don't share your, because there is, when you put stuff on Facebook, you know, some of it, a lot of people see, some people don't see. It's all an algorithm. I mean, and at the end of the day, when those algorithms get tweaked, you notice the differences.
Well, yeah, we've talked about, this is obviously a complex issue for sure. And we've talked about this in the past, but what I'd say is for every good thing that the internet has brought us, especially since I started in 1995, there's a bunch of bad that comes with it. And, you know, we talk about the how it's made the world a smaller place. It's allowed people to connect. It allowed my kids who are, thank goodness they were beyond high school and college when the virus hit and they were in the real world already. But it allowed them growing up to play video games with people all across the world. But at the same time, that same internet connection that could have been used to play football or Halo with people is being used to hack into electrical grids so that if you choose to, you can shut down the electrical grid or the water supply or the portion of the water supply that cleans it before it goes out to people's pipes.
Or the billing system itself, you know, whatever it would do to cripple, right? Like literally.
Exactly. And look, there are leaders and there are followers and there are people who are predisposed to be manipulated. And unfortunately, when you talk about free speech, you're opening it up for, and I'm not saying you shouldn't, but you provide an opportunity, just like you do for the people who want no good to come of potentially shutting down the electrical grid or a billing system. There are people who are trying to manipulate sentiment from people who are followers and are impressionable and don't take into account what the source is. And we see that's what's going on here. We see that there are the masses of people, I call them sheep, who are being groomed and herded by these people who know what they're saying isn't true, but they're doing it for their own selfish interest. And that's where the rub is. And is it fair to curb free speech because there are sheep out there that are vulnerable? That's the conundrum.
Well, somebody has to own Twitter, right? Somebody regulates what's on or off or what's against the rules or what's too pornographic or, you know, the whatever the rules are. Children's violence, sex, death, you know, faces of death. I remember that being the big thing 20 years ago, you know, sharing that kind of stuff. I mean, no offense, but like every single year I have people on my Facebook show pictures of them holding dead animals they've murdered. You know what I mean? Like holding a dead duck on the front of their Facebook with a gun up. And I'm like, I'm offended by that. I am. Yeah. I don't need to see that on my timeline. So people are their own arbiters in the same way that Don Mueller doesn't want to see my true thoughts about the Orioles. I don't have to make the Orioles stuff up, but people get angry about things they don't agree with, and shut up has become a very, very American thing to say, or cancel, which I will cancel you. I'm not going to watch that channel. You know what I mean? I don't necessarily think Fox News shouldn't be on your cable channel. It's just, I'm not watching it. And after cutting the cord, I'm no longer paying for it anymore. So there is the part where paying for things that service that don't service the country or don't service the greater good, and it coming out of your water bill or coming out of your taxes or coming out of things like that. But the things we actually choose to do, the internet is one of those things. You don't have to be on the internet, right? You don't have to be on Twitter. You don't have to be on Facebook or wherever, but we're all looking for information in some way. And I don't know that the unregulated part of the internet, to your point, has caught up with the charlatans who seek to take advantage of all of that. And I don't know that we're ever going to correct that. It certainly has leaked into politics and money and vaccines, for crying out loud. There was no movement against the polio vaccine 80 years ago in the way that what we saw in this country the last 24 months.
Right. You know how you turn on one of our local channels on a rant, let's just say it's a Sunday at 8 a.m. and they have no programming. So you have a infomercial, and in the very beginning of the infomercial, they're very honest to say, these are not our views, and this is a paid blah, 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 and it's transparent. I'm not a fan of canceling free speech. I wish there was a way, a trusted way, and I don't think that there is, where there could be a body, a respected body of people from all over the political, religious, whatever.
We already had that with scientists about the plague 2 years ago, and nobody listened to it because it was to all of our points from the beginning of this, it was really, really not good economically. It was really not good freedom wise. It was really not good fun wise. Nobody's getting laid. Nobody's making money. Nobody's being happy. Nobody's doing anything. Like, people didn't want to accept it. It goes back to the Carl Sagan thing, right? Like, right. We fixed our mind on what feels good, and it didn't feel good. Right. And therefore, the scientist must be, Dr. Fauci, you must be a bad guy, because what you're telling me to do, I don't like it.
I wish there was a way when people turn into their chosen cable news network that prior to a program, it said, this is a opinion program versus this is a news program, so that when you were digesting this content, you knew. Now, I know I could turn on any cable channel from both sides of the spectrum and immediately be able to tell what's opinion and what's not news. I'm not saying I'm smarter than everyone, because I clearly am not. But there are the masses of people who I believe have a difficult time differentiating between what is news and what is opinion. And if they understood that something was an opinion, maybe they could take the next leap and say, I wonder what's motivating that person's opinion to be able to say all these things and be able to differentiate that from what they believe is as unbiased as possible, which is very difficult, news that they're digesting. So
when you change the facts, you change the whole outcome.
And what I was suggesting, and I don't know that I want it to be government, but some sort of trusted body, which is going to be very difficult in today's
age. It used to be a newspaper. The right. Newspaper was held accountable that if it was in there, it had to be true. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in business very long, right? Like, that's what local news became in the 50s, 60s, 70s, Edward R. Murrow, bringing down government, Watergate, all of that. It's that if it's in the paper or if it's on the news at night, they have a responsibility to have ethics and integrity. That kind of went away in the last 30 years. Or you get sued, right.
Right. And even the newspapers today, I'm not saying they do a perfect job, but there's opinion pieces in the written newspaper, and they are identified as opinion people or opinion columns versus news columns. So,
well, as a kid that grew up in the newsroom and a kid that wrote stories with my name on it every day, and I ran into one of my dear editor friends, Bob Nusgart, last week, and we're talking about this. There was a really, really high bar for proof to be putting it in the paper with my name on it, my boss's name on it, his boss's name on it, the publisher's name on it, and every advertiser, as well as the banner that said The Sun on it, that if I'm writing it, there were checks and balances there to make sure that it was a fact.
Right. What if there was a respected body? This is where I'm kind of going to, and I'm going to make an analogy. And
we had that. It was called editors.
Well, you can beat the crap out of this analogy and say you're out of your mind. But you know, let's just identify two opinion programs on different sides of the spectrum. We got a Hannity on one side. We have a Rachel Maddow on the other side. You may view them differently, but I don't know that they're like news programs like Walter Cronkite back in the day where you had your 30 minutes, right? Now, what if there was a rating that said, this is opinion, this is this, or this is that, just like the movies. It's not a perfect analogy, but you have
G. No, right, right. Like rated X. Rated X was my parents weren't taking me to. Or they had to think about it and they knew there might be some boobies or it might be the F word or, you know, something like that.
But you knew going into a scenario that if someone was rated triple X.
I knew if I went to R, I was getting boobies, especially in a Burt Reynolds movie, right? Like, right? I knew that at 15 and my parents knew that and they're like, no. PG-13, we'll let Tanner Boyle cuss, maybe say the S-bomb, maybe one or two F-bombs, but that's PG. We do PG. That became PG-13, but PG.
But you know what you're getting into. You know what your expectations are as you're going into it. You go in with both eyes wide open with expectations of what's up. Now, granted, you see a movie and you're like, why is that PG? What was PG about that? But that's besides.
Well, that was usually on TBS where they edited out the boobies.
That's right. So you're sitting there and you're like, okay, there's a mechanism. It's not a perfect one. And believe me, I'm sure people who do movies are probably putting stuff.
Oh my God. When a movie got an X and not an R, an R, not a PG, when the Academy sent it back, I remember seeing stories about them. That's going to cost us millions of dollars that we're not this or not that or whatever. But that's the way the rate. Hey, it's the same thing with the oil industry in this country or with emissions or with any of that. There's a standard, right?
Right.
To your point, you know, the kitchen has to be clean because we have health departments, right? Like taxes have to be right because we have the IRS. To your point, there is no oversight on that. Right.
Now, I don't know who the one who has the Pinocchios, how many Pinocchios that, you know, and fact checking. I forget which publication has that, but it's only reliable if Biden gets the same Pinocchio treatment as Trump did. If it's just only one gets it and it doesn't seem fair or equally distributed, then it's a problem. But
well, if Biden cancels your kid's debt, you're good. He's going to get your vote.
Right. So that's right. So, well, that's another story because I paid for my kid's education when, and now I'm like, oh, if I only allowed you to finance it, I wouldn't have had to. I would have had to pay, and I don't want to tell you what I paid for.
Yeah, I know.
But it is what it is. You know, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose.
You and I could have a boat with that money right now.
Right.
That we wouldn't use.
A serious boat. That would.
We'd never want to put gas in.
That's right. But getting back to Twitter, I would love for it to be, whether it's a color code, whether it's G, PG-13, whatever, I would love for there to be a way where people from all sides of the spectrum could get a barometer of whether this is opinion, whether this is reliable, whether this publisher is more often right on track or not. Pinocchio's, I don't care what it is, but instead of canceling, instead of curbing people's free speech.
We have a culture where the tapes come out of crimes and we just say, well, too powerful to prosecute him. Let's prosecute somebody where we can not be unpopular. I mean, it's amazing where there is proof. And I don't mean a Photoshop picture of something. I'm talking about like evidence, you know, and still then when the evidence isn't good enough, you have a different mindset, you know, that then it becomes more culty on whatever scale you're talking about, whatever that may be.
Yeah. So these are obviously heavy, heavy issues. They are things that aren't going to be solved right away. So the question is, what's Elon Musk going to do about it? I don't imagine that he's going to invest the money that he's investing to screw this up. So I read that that Dorsey's staying on as CEO, at least for now. And I think it's too early to jump to conclusions. As a business person, independent of what you think of his business or his political views, typically what the guy touches wins from a business standpoint. So
they said that about Trump, but that wasn't true.
It wasn't true. But I think all indicate, well, there's one thing to say it.
You just pitched Fox News's reason to vote for Trump back in, for 3 years, which is he's a business success, not mentioning the 50 businesses he destroyed.
Right.
That the one he has is a shell business, essentially.
Right. So I'm going to reserve judgment. I'm going to keep my eye on it because it's my job as a chief digital officer to see what's up and what these changes mean. I was reading that people already left Twitter, which to me, I guess is more of a political statement because there's been no official change that I know of that would have warranted people leaving. So we'll keep our eye on it. We'll see what's up. I don't believe he made this investment to tank it.
It's just an amazing thing because I remember going into my staff 15 years ago and saying, hey, there's this little blue bird, this tweet thing. It's 140 characters, to think that it's worth $44 billion. I mean, you're talking about most of the NFL, you're talking about bigger than the NHL. You're talking about just a lot of money for something that is in the cosmos, right?
Like literally trying to figure out how they monetize, but that's another business.
What's it ever going to make, right? Like literally.
Right. So we'll see. So look, I'm not here to preach, but those of you that listen, keep your eyes wide open, see where your source is coming from. So sometimes at night I use a news aggregator. The one I use is called Flipboard. You may have heard of it.
I like learning these tech things from my chief digital officer.
Yeah. So you can get it. There's a bunch of them, but basically what it does is aggregates news. It gets a sense of, are you a sports guy or your politics, whatever. And it pulls articles in and I'll see a headline and I'll be like, whoa, that's pretty enticing headline. And then I'll see where the source is. And if I'm not familiar with the source, I choose not to consume that because I don't know. That could be using a Trump line. That could be some guy in his underwear in his basement who's publishing this article. And I refuse to pollute my mind with something that I don't think. Now, some could say, well, you're sheltering yourself and you're only consuming news from places that you feel that you trust.
I'm big on credible, right? Credible would be when I'm looking for a restaurant in Chicago this week, or credible would be when I'm buying a Van Halen belt buckle online that I'm buying from somebody on eBay. That's a night when I'm getting an Uber. Do I have a driver that's done this many, many times before and is highly rated? So like the rating system to some degree, although people will say they saw a cockroach in your restaurant or a rat in your restaurant, whatever it is, right? But for the most part, that system, egalitarian web, has become something good. That has been a good thing. Rarely have I had a bad meal in a place with 800 great reviews. Rarely.
Right.
So there is that good news travels fast in that world as well for whatever it is you're looking to do on the web, that if you are following trusted people on the web, whoever, if you trusted Dan Rather for 35 years, he's a great follow on Twitter. You know what I mean? So wherever that information is, if you voted for Barack Obama, you follow him. I guess if you voted for Donald Trump, you can follow him when they let him back on.
Right. And that's the thing. I think you've touched on a great word, credible. And when I'm going through my Flipboard app, I don't just choose the content that is consistent with my beliefs. If there's a credible source inconsistent with that, I want to consume that content as well. So I can make a more informed decision, or I can have more intelligent conversations with people who are also credible, who also have high integrity, but don't agree with everything that I agree with, so that we can have intelligent conversations and maybe enlighten each other. So, I mean, look, I said I didn't want to preach and I don't want to come across as preachy, but look, That's how I choose to approach it. Everyone has the right to approach it the way that they're comfortable.
That's why we have wise conversations around here. Mike Rosenfeld is our chief digital officer here at Baltimore Positive. We're building a bigger, newer, better Baltimore Positive very soon. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I got some Betty Boop scratch offs to give away. We had to move our show, Conrad's, from the 27th to May 6th. So we will see you on Friday at Conrad Seafood in Perry Hall on Bel Air Road. And there's several locations. We're going to be in the Perry Hall location from 2 until 5 on Friday the 6th. Also in conjunction with our friends at Goodwill Industries, and now our newest sponsor at Window Nation as well, all invested in our Maryland Crab Cake Tour. And I hope Mike comes out and has a crab cake with us as well. Any parting shot for you? You watched any baseball at all? Are you into this World Cup? I've been talking so much World Cup. I mean, this would be the biggest thing in the history of the city if we get this bid 5-6 weeks from now.
Oh, so that's when the decision. So
mid to late June, it'll happen. Yes.
I am late to the soccer game, but I see the appeal. In fact, I called my older son. I said, you want to go to Cincinnati? They're having them on a Wednesday in June. They're having a friendly against Morocco. Let's hop on a plane. Let's meet there. We'll go overnight. So I'm
now what you need to do if you're in Cincinnati, just so you know this, not only just get the chili and get the indigestion, you can do that. The ribs and McCurry, they're fine. We're going to Cincinnati Zoo. They have this special hippopotamus there.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, they have a really famous hippo at the Cincinnati Zoo. It's true.
Look at you, Miss full of all interesting nuggets. But yeah, so you're saying 5 to 6 weeks an announcement's made. Which World Cup, what year is it?
2026. It's a North American bid. There's going to be 3 cities in Mexico, 2 maybe 3 in Canada, and then 10 in America. And what happened last week is, and this is the first time that I can think of this in modern history, maybe somebody will give me something as good. The DC bid, it's DC, it's the capital of the free world. They like have to have games, right? FIFA hates the stadium. Yeah. The stadium's falling apart. It's in a bad location. Every time they've ever played, it's not made for a real soccer pitch. Every time they've played friendlies there, it's been awful for everybody. And Baltimore's had friendlies and Gold Cup games, and it's gone well. And we've stayed in this thing as Phoenix went out, Chicago went out. Some of these cities are not a part of the bid. The problem is there are a lot of credible cities here. If I start to do the math and give you the New York's going to get it, LA's going to get it, right? I mean, Jerry's World, Miami, they're just obvious places that are going to get games. The NFL's involved in this, right? So Bob Kraft in Boston, the Hunt family in Kansas City, very involved in the starting of MLS in this country 25 years ago. So like all of that factors into this. But the story for us is this. FIFA and the North America delegation said, put yourselves together and we'll probably get you to the finish line because you're Washington, D.C. So the idea is the party would be in D.C. on the Mall where all the diplomats, all the world's powers are in D.C. They're going to throw the party there and the games would be in our stadium where you get on the MARC train, walk 6 blocks over to Union Station, take the train 35 minutes, 40 minutes, and you're let off 2 blocks from Camden Yards where the games would be here. And the harbor would be a giant one-month party. Be bigger than any Super Bowl we've ever had. And we wouldn't just get a game or two. We're the DC bid. So you probably get 6 or 8 games.
Right.
So this would be a really, really big deal in addition to 48 countries coming to America and needing to set up training facilities. So Baltimore was always thought to be, and this is, I'll have Pete Carinci on later. I'm also having Kenny Cooper on this week. Baltimore was always thought as Towson, UMBC, Loyola, Maryland would have training facilities that if the Moroccan team wanted to stay at the Towson Sheridan and train at Towson University, there are going to be 48 countries that do that. And cities like Baltimore would be very affordable, on the train line, good airport, good infrastructure, near Philadelphia, Boston, New York, Atlanta, Miami, places that might have games. Everything changed on Friday when the bids went together and the politics of it. So I've talked to Grant Wall this week, Steve Goff from the Washington Post, had a lot of get Marty Conway and I went at it at length about what this really would mean and how close we are to having this actually happen, that it's going to be very, very hard for them to deny the Washington bid. We are the Washington bid. We are their state
Yeah. So I'm feeling everything that you're saying, and I didn't know that we were that close.
Well, that's why I'm educating people.
I'm just thinking, you know, just the money, the tourism, the people coming to stay for the period of time. I mean, what it would mean, the exposure to the city, if we can get our act together and put our best foot forward so that we can maybe accentuate our positives, unlike The Wire and whatever the new HBO program that's come out, that's the next version.
I got David Simon on a couple weeks. He kind of looks a little bit like you. So I got Simon coming on 3 weeks. So we're going to be three episodes in before we bring him on. So I'm looking forward
to hook us up and give us some – give him some positive love and not all murder and homicide, which...
Well, he would tell you that Levinson makes those movies about Baltimore. Right.
When was the last Levinson Baltimore movie? All right, come on.
I'm still crying after Avalon. If you saw Avalon, it makes me cry every time I see it. Mike Rosenfeld is here. He is our chief digital officer at Web Connection. Tell me what you do at Web Connection.
So if you're out there, you own a business, and this resonates with you, you have no idea what to do with your digital strategy. You have a website, you don't know what to do with it. Yeah, maybe post randomly to Facebook and Twitter, but you don't know what you're doing. You don't know how to email market. You don't know how to grow your business digitally. And you're pissed because you see some of your competitors killing it and you want to play the game. That's where we come in. Most small businesses can't afford a digital leader. So we're fractional, affordable. We come in, we understand, we learn your business, and we figure out a plan on how you can leverage all of the vast number of digital tools to grow your business, to attract the right talent, and to win. So that's what we do at Web Connection. We work with our clients to help them figure out how to win rather than them wandering aimlessly, just trying to figure it out, but not doing a good job.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to do 31 crab cakes and 31 breweries in August. All of it brought to you by the Maryland Lottery, as well as our friends at Goodwill and Window Nation. And Mike will be side by side with me, making sure that my crab cake module works out on the front of the website and the little things like that. So we're going to be on it. Hey, appreciate you, man. Relax this weekend and enjoy all the drafting and the draft picks. And we'll get together on the other side. Luke and I will be talking about that as well. Have a great week.
You too.
Mike Rosenfeld, my pal. You can find him at webconnection.com. You can find me anywhere the internet is served. I'm wearing my El Guapo shirt. I have been doing brunch at the Beaumont the last couple of Sundays. They have this lobster Benedict thing that's like one of the greatest things I've ever had. These delicious potatoes and this bacon that has this stuff on it that's just delicious. So get on over to the Beaumont, get on over to El Guapo and our friends at State Fair. We're going to be doing another show. We had a great conversation at El Guapo with Rob Roblin as well as Jane Miller. We'll be getting back to State Fair. It's been almost a year since we've been at State Fair doing a show. We have been at Beaumont, have been at El Guapo. We're going to be getting back to State Fair in July and eating their delicious and very simplistic crab cake. I am Nestor. Although maybe I want the chicken breast with the crab thing on top of it with the cream sauce. So delicious. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570. We never stop talking. Chicken Chesapeake and BaltimorePositive.com.